What is healing? How do we cultivate healing in our lives? Healing is not curing. The two are inherently different. Curing means eliminating evidence of all dis-ease. And healing means becoming whole. Curing is what a physician seeks to offer us. Healing, however, comes from within. It's what we bring to the table. Healing can be described as a physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual process of coming home. In some ways, healing is a continuous discovery of what it means to be alive in a body on the planet. It's not about defying death or becoming perfect in any way. It's about living with the ongoing stresses and strains and joys of life, but doing so in a way that feels balanced and whole. It's about acknowledging the wounded, broken parts of ourselves with empathy and compassion and acceptance. I love what Buddhist teacher Pema Chodron says about healing. Quote, "We think that the point is to pass the test or overcome the problem, but the truth is that things don't really get solved. They come together and they fall apart. And then they come together again and fall apart again." Anyone relate to that? Right. Okay. I'm still in the middle of the quote. The healing comes from letting there be room for all of this to happen. Room for grief. Room for relief. Room for misery. And room for joy. I know from my own experience that I come together and fall apart regularly. And some of that has to do with the familial wound my brothers and I inherited from my parents. It's a combination of an expectation of perfectionism from my mother, and that perfectionism encompasses so many things, and then this crazy work ethic of my father. So the tape I play in my head, which I see as actually now as a more wise adult, this tape, which is work hard all the time without making mistakes until you die or you are unworthy. Right? So that's what I live with. So what are the childhood wounds alive in you today? Sometimes it's difficult to access them or want to even be with them because of the emotions they evoke, right? Especially if there's abuse. But if our feelings are locked away in bone or blood or muscle or tightly wrapped memory boxes in our minds, and the river of tears or the river of anger or shrieks of fear have not yet been set free, then healing does not occur. We must have the tools and the courage to bring our sadness and shame, our grief and loneliness, our despair and fear, our rage and resentment to the surface of our beings. So what feelings are buried in you? What are the unexpressed emotions preventing you from moving forward, from becoming whole? Where do they live? How can freedom happen? How can release happen for you? So when I do this type of meditation or contemplation and I reflect on the buried feelings in me, people, places, events flow through my awareness, and somehow they all gather in my heart, which becomes really full and heavy with all of those cracks, and as if it would burst open, shattering into a billion pieces of the unloved, unexpressed parts of myself. Yet if I breathe there and become present with that pain, with that heaviness, the longing, the regret, the loneliness, then my whole being is flooded with sadness. And even, I know, under the rage, which is easier for me than sadness, just beyond the fear, there's a peace that can wash over me. And instead of breaking, my heart becomes a vast ocean, encompassing all of me, all of you, and then I feel connected and whole. So let's take a little more time in silence right now. Maybe you can go back to that mudra if you like, or just sitting quietly and stilly. And just asking, what lies hidden inside of you? Or maybe it's not so hidden, but what is there right now that needs healing? And as those thoughts or images or feelings arise, breathe into those parts. And breathe those parts deep into the heart. The heart is a beautiful tool. It's actually a very strong brain in our being. All these nerves come together where compassion can arise. We are the only creatures on the planet who can change our biology through our thoughts, feelings, and intentions. When we fall in love, positive thoughts and emotions course through our body and strengthen our immune system. On the other hand, the dark thoughts and feelings of depression or loneliness or shame can leave us vulnerable to illness. Over the past three decades, we have witnessed a rising of holistic health research and techniques showing that nothing holds more power over the body than the beliefs of the mind, and that our physical well-being is directly linked to our spiritual well-being. This is good. We've learned that the power of positive thinking and prayer impact our healing. This is good. We also know that we can take proactive responsibility for our own healing. This is also good. Yet, we sometimes interpret our inability to heal as a spiritual deficit. This is not good. It's complicated, and we can't simplify and reduce our diseases and illnesses to cause and effect. Whether it's karma, fate, destiny, environment, genetics, emotions, trauma, all of that comes into play. What we do know is that life is precious, and death is inevitable. Opening our hearts to ourselves and each other may not cure us, but it does cultivate healing and wholeness. Dr. Rachel Naomi Remen, a physician who uses art, meditation, and other spiritual practices in the healing of cancer patients, shares a story in one of her talks. A 24-year-old man came to her after one of his legs had been amputated at the hip in order to save his life from bone cancer. When she began her work with him, he had a great sense of injustice and a hatred for all healthy people. It seemed bitterly unfair to him that he had suffered this terrible loss so early in his life. His grief and rage were so great that it took him several years of continuous work for him to be able to come out of himself and to start to heal. His body needed to heal, of course, but more so his broken heart and his wounded spirit. So she helped him. He worked hard and deeply, telling his story. He painted his story. He meditated. He brought his whole life into his awareness. And as he slowly healed, he developed a profound compassion for others in similar situations. He began to visit people in the hospital who had suffered severe physical losses. On one occasion, he visited a young singer who was so depressed about the loss of her breasts that she wouldn't even look at him. The nurses had the radio playing, probably hoping to cheer her up. It was a hot day, and the young man had come in running shorts. Finally, desperate to get her attention, he unstrapped his artificial leg and began dancing around the room on his one leg, snapping his fingers to the music. She looked at him in amazement, and then she burst out laughing and said, "Man, if you can dance, I can sing." When this young man first began working with drawing, he made a crayon sketch of his own body in the form of a vase with a deep black crack running through it. He redrew that crack over and over again as he grinded his teeth with rage. Several years later, to encourage him to complete his process, Rachel showed him his early pictures again. He saw the vase and said, "Oh, this one isn't finished." When she suggested that he finish it, he did. He ran his finger over the crack, saying, "You see here? This is where the light comes through." And with a yellow crayon, he drew light streaming through the crack into the body of the vase and said, "Our hearts can grow strong in the broken places." As this young man opened his heart and began to heal, he became the wounded healer. According to Carl Jung, wounded people are healed by other wounded people. Because wounded people understand compassion and companionship, not advice or expertise are needed to ease our suffering. Are you a wounded healer? Have you used your wounds to support or have compassion for others? Wounding and healing are not opposites, right? It's our wounds that enable us to have empathy for another's wounds, right? Some of you have expressed that to me over the past 3 weeks. It's our limitations that make us kind to the limitations of others. I remembered when I herniated a disc years ago. I hadn't been ever in so much pain, and so it gave me a whole new understanding for people in pain and for also people that couldn't move, right? And it was lonely, that process of healing for me at times. But it's in our loneliness that helps us to find other people, to know that we're not alone in our illness. So our wounds actually are gifts to be shared. Wendell Berry tells us healing is impossible in loneliness. Right? It's the opposite of loneliness. Conviviality is healing, he says. To be healed, we must come with all the other creatures to the feast of creation. When we come together as family, as friends, as a community, as a congregation, with our hearts open, even in with our cracks and vulnerability, then we're less afraid of our own pain and suffering, and we find strength in each other's experience and wisdom, and then we grow trust. Sometimes healing work requires an ally or a teacher or a guide to hold our hand and inspire our courage as we go through it. And then miracles happen. The Sufi poet Rumi sees it this way. Trust your wound to a teacher's surgery. Flies collect on a wound. They cover it, those flies of your self-protecting feelings, your love for what you think is yours. Let a teacher wave away the flies and put a plaster on the wound. Don't turn your head. Keep looking at the bandaged wound. That's where the light enters you. And don't believe for a moment that you're healing yourself. So who in your life helps wave away the flies and put plaster on your wounds? Or what activities open you to healing? When I saw my daughter painting this summer, I asked her if painting brought her healing. She said, yes, art does, and music too, and sunshine, rosely, laughter, nature, even sitting up straight and smiling makes me feel better. Shifts my perception, she says, and family, if you have a good one, or whatever your family is. And what especially heals me is a touch of gray by the Grateful Dead. Yeah, that was like an exact quote that she said, all of it. So we need to find the people and the places and activities that bring us healing. This is actually more important than anything we do, because we can't be in the world and do our work, be the wounded healer, right? Be activists if we aren't in our own healing process. Sometimes when I think of healing, I have a desire for my body and mind to be what it wants was, like Poppy was talking about, before all the wounds, right? Like the children are, before I became trapped more in time and space. But here I am, I have a choice, right? I can go for wholeness or holding on, kindness or cruelty, freedom or fear. And I remember the words of Rachel Naomi Raymond. Healing, she says, may not be so much about getting better as about letting go of everything that isn't you, all of the expectations, all of the beliefs, and becoming who you are. And we must remember that healing doesn't mean going back. It's allowing what is present in us now to move us closer to our truest self, to spirit, to who we really are. This is what one of my congregants recently told me. She has Hodgkin's lymphoma. When I asked her what healing is in relationship to her cancer, she said, I'm learning to finally let go of everything, my depression and my anxiety, and to be open to opportunities for love and self-compassion. I'm coming back to me, finding myself again. Healing, she said, is not contracting inward, but expanding outward to find the joy in life. And sometimes that requires forgiveness. I know for this woman, a lot of forgiveness was needed, right? Forgiveness is one of the most powerful tools for healing. Heart teacher and healer Marianne Williamson says, the practice of forgiveness is our most important contribution to the healing of the world. And one of my teachers, Carolyn Meese, says, by far the strongest poison to the human spirit is the inability to forgive oneself or another person. Forgiveness is no longer an option, but a necessity for healing. So who do you need to forgive? Yourself, someone else, loved one, friend, leader, teacher, politician? Right? There's so many. I remember one after the Iraq war started, I spent that whole summer really working to forgive our president at that time, you know, because I was so angry that he did what he did. And it really was a beautiful process for me. So let's take a few moments right now in silence and stillness once again, maybe going back to the mudra, taking a breath, going into the heart. breathing into the heart and sensing someone, maybe it's yourself, that is calling for forgiveness, right? And breathing compassion and empathy and kindness to all that needs forgiveness in our awareness. When we simply sit and be with our hearts, our breath, our presence, healing happens. I love this poem by Wendell Berry. I go among trees and sit still. All my stirring becomes quiet around me like circles on water. My tasks lie in their places where I left them, asleep like cattle. Then what I am afraid of comes. I live for a while in its sight, what I fear, and it leaves it, and the fear of it leaves me. It sings, and I hear its song. So when we listen to the songs of our wounds, our loneliness, our longing, our fear, they change. So healing's cultivated as our hearts shine light on the broken places, so we can actually find joy and feast on creation. And even the most painful songs, we can heal through the divine art of forgiveness, right? And this pain that we feel and this healing that we experience and this wholeness is universal, right? It's part of all of us as one humanity. So when we heal ourselves or we witness another in their healing, when we offer forgiveness and empathy and compassion, then love grows. And we can see ourselves and each other as beautiful and whole. So we'll sing number 1053 in the Teal Hymnal. I love this song, and my congregation doesn't know it, and we don't have the Teal Hymnal, so we never get to sing it.